Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by my virtual friend, Justin Dean. Justin, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Nils. Man, we're more than virtual friends, aren't we?
I feel like we're
closer than that.
So I believe that virtual friends are real friends, but you and I have never met face-to-face. I feel like a big hug is in our future at some point, like a full frontal squeeze.
It's going to be a full-on bro hug when we meet, man, because I feel like we have met, but no, we've just known each other a long time.
Yeah, but legitimate friends, even though we don't get to hang out face-to-face or haven't yet. I asked Justin to do kind of this urgent, I call it urgent, it's hot on my mind, podcast about how to handle disasters when they happen in the church. And I say disasters, not necessarily even just disasters in your church, but disasters period, like when we think about the attacks in France or when we think about something that happens in our world. And so what's happening right now in our country is the hurricane in Texas. And so you're seeing churches everywhere, I think, are kind of going through this. How do we respond? So there's certain situations where those that in Houston or in Corpus Christi, how do they respond? But then others, when you're in, you know, New York, how do you respond to what's going on in Houston? What do you say? How do you address it? So you're the expert in PR. You literally wrote the book on it for churches. That's why I wanted to reach out to you and share your thoughts. So maybe let's just start with that. If you are a church in Georgia, which is where you live, let's talk about the specific situation. Then we talk just general speaking. How should a church in Georgia respond to the hurricane in Texas?
Well, I mean, you know, Georgia, for an example, we're not too far away. So, you know, I know churches who literally are loading up U-Haul trucks and driving over there with supplies. And you know, whether they have a plan or not, they're just showing up and trying to help. You know, other churches are kind of listening online and looking for those needs and trying to help where they can. Most are just, you know, what can we do from afar is raise money. Money is needed in these situations. You know, FEMA comes in and helps out, but that money's not going to show up for years. And sometimes it's, you know, if you don't do something exactly right, you may never see that. And so there's people with real needs that the church can meet. And so, you know, I think that's the least we could do is raise money. Well, no, I take that back. The least we can do is post a graphic saying pray for Houston and then go back to our normal lives. Like, you know, prayer works. Let's pray and continue to pray. But if you're actually praying, I feel like it should push you to action of some sort, whether that's giving, you know, showing up in a truck or meeting needs some other way. So I applaud the churches who are, and the individuals and companies and organizations who are jumping in and trying to actually do something to help. Yeah.
So it sounds like you kind of have three options where, from a communication standpoint, you can post a graphic, post something to say, pray for Houston, pray for Texas. Mm-hmm. You can, too, raise money for the certain scenario. So pray for Houston, and if you'd like to donate, we've set up a special fund.
Yeah.
And then third is you can load up a truck and say, hey, if you want to go, we're going this weekend. We're loading a truck, or you can bring some goods. So those are kind of three options. How do you know what's the right option? Because you can't respond to every single disaster in the world. Sure. How do you measure that? How do you kind of know what's too much or not enough?
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, like we're not too far from Georgia. So for some churches, if they have the means or the conviction, it makes sense to go drive a truck. Now, driving a truck from New York, you know, that's probably not for everybody. You know, I think if it's within your means and your reach, then do what you can. At the end of the day, you don't want to look back and go, you know what, we could have drove a truck over there. And we didn't. Because why? Because we were selfish, because we were, you know, whatever the reason is. So I think you need to look at where God is calling you in this and listen to the Holy Spirit and just have some discernment about what does God want me as an individual to do and what does God want us as a church to do if you're leading a church or part of a church and, you know, and just obey. But I think if you're from afar, you know, you don't even have to set up a special fund. There's so many great churches, even in the Texas area, that have already set up, you know, pages for these. I think one of them is Ecclesia Houston. Houston.com or HoustonEcclesia.com. We'll have to make sure we get that right. But they've set up a whole page of like, hey, not only our church, but here's some other links to give. Direct people to that. Like, why spread that money out over 500 churches when we can funnel it into four or five who are actually on the ground doing the work? And, you know, we can create awareness for that as well. But you got to listen to the Spirit. You got to pray about this and find out what's best for your church.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that idea of partnering with a local church and the work that they're doing. And I think it's become more complicated, I think, because there's so many non-denominational churches now where historically you just say, what is our denomination doing? And we're going to align with that. Where so many churches now are almost, you know, kind of independently operated. I don't know if that's the right term, but there's lack of a network there, and but finding those opportunities to partner, even if there are some theological differences, at the bottom line, if you're getting some things done in the name of Jesus, you know, let's align.
Who cares? Or, you know, are we asking the theological convictions and background of the homeless guy before we feed him? No, like, whatever. God calls us to feed him. So, you know, I think in situations like this, if you're partnering with them to say, hey, if you're in the Houston area, here's a church to go check out. Sure, you might want to check out their beliefs and make sure it aligns. But, hey, if they're on the ground meeting needs of the people and you can help facilitate that, then great. You know, go for it. I don't think you have to look too deeply into that. Now I think, you know, through the local churches like that is probably a better use of our money than – even giving to some of these bigger organizations. Like, you know, I love the Red Cross. I love Salvation Army. There's definitely some good big organizations that are, you know, showing up with trucks and showing up with supplies and stuff like that too. And those are great to give to. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of big organizations that, you know, there's still something like $14 million sitting in Haiti bank accounts that haven't ever been used. And it's like, man, they're just sitting there. So I think choose wisely, be shrewd with your money to be able to give it to places that are actually going to use it right away.
Yep.
Meeting the needs of the people.
Yeah. I love it. So let's, I want to shift to you're having a disaster happening in your local place. Mm-hmm. I think it would be, anybody who's listening to this podcast is generally on social media, and I think it'd be impossible to be on social media this week and not see Joel Osteen in the news. Yeah. He was just on the Today Show, I think yesterday. I saw him, and he has taken all kinds of flack. Now, he takes flack for everything. We are not a podcast of debate of Joel Osteen and Lakewood Church, but how he handled this situation, I think, is a good model. And because he is so public, in your expertise, how would you consult Joel Osteen looking back? Now, he can't go back, you know, he can't go back and change things, but if you could have from the beginning, how would you consult him how to handle this situation?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely incredibly complex. I mean, nobody, no church knows what it's like to open up an arena to people in need. I mean, you're talking about, you can't just open your doors. You have to mobilize thousands of volunteers and security guards and other things to be able to actually care for those people well. Otherwise, you're going to have a full-on mob ripping out, you know, the stadium seating and stuff. Like, it takes coordination to be able to do this well. And so I get how complex the issue was. I think where I would consult them, you know, if they asked, was just in their communications of things. So I talk a lot about just, hey, you need to be transparent as much as you can be transparent, but really the key is to be candid. Yeah. And I think, you know, you're the biggest church in the world, and you're in Houston, the hub of where this giant natural disaster that we've never seen before is happening.
Yep.
You need to pause for a second and maybe turn off the auto tweets, turn off the scheduled platitudes and things like that, and focus on like what's at hand happening in your community. I mean, this is the biggest natural disaster to happen in the area, and they're saying one of the largest natural disasters to happen ever.
Yep.
And so that's a big deal. Like, if you're not paying attention to that and being part of that conversation, then I think you're really missing an opportunity to be the church there. So I think, you know, they communicated a few things and people jumped on them because they're Lakewood and Joel Osteen, but I think that they could have used those platforms to actually have conversations with people and walk through the different scenarios. Cause I don't think, you know, when you take a larger picture and you take a step back, I don't think they really did anything wrong. Absolutely. What they did wrong was not communicate what was happening. So people are making up their own story. They're making up their own accusations and the media is running with it because they love to. And even Christians love to share that. Oh, especially anything we can say against Joel Osteen. It's like, come on. Yeah. So I think that they kind of missed a beat with that. I don't know what goes into social media management for the largest church in the world, but they certainly could have done a better job.
Yeah, you know, and I think the big takeaway here is really what wasn't said. So many times when it comes to natural disasters is when those auto-schedule tweets. Now, we are tweeting for clients a month in advance. We're scheduling content out.
That's great.
And those are those moments that, in this situation, you actually had a little bit more time because you knew a hurricane was coming to Texas. Yeah. So I'm not really trying to bash neither you or Lakewood or Joel Osteen, because I saw so many pastors with those auto tweets on and honestly, even on my own, I should have turned those off personally and I don't have, you know, that kind of platform. It just is, I think turning off the scheduled post, pausing those for a moment, or a few moments, and then really, really just analyzing the situation moment by moment, but you've got to communicate. This is not a time to under communicate what we're doing. And even if it is, we can't do anything right now. Communicating that, being transparent, I think is key.
Well, and it's not so much that the scheduled tweets were going out. I mean, honestly, like I look around, you know, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and if I wasn't paying attention to the news or social media, I would have no idea that you know, half of Texas is underwater right now, because it doesn't affect me. My church goes on. We're going to stay in the series we're in. We're communicating the same things. I'm posting things on Facebook. Like, you know, this isn't taking over everything, but it is something that we need to be a part of the conversation. So even if those scheduled tweets continue to go, that's fine. But in between that, you need to be actually using that as a communications tool to let people know what's going on. Because what the problem is, if you say nothing and then it's just the scheduled tweets, it looks like you're just ignoring the situation completely and don't have a care in the world. And it's like, man, you should have saw this coming. We knew the hurricane was coming. We didn't know how bad it would be, but you know, as soon as you knew it was bad, maybe you should pay attention to those things and jump into gear. So it definitely seems like they fumbled through that a bit, and to their, you know, to their credit, I guess, like nothing like this is really ever happened, especially in that area that I know of. And so, you know, maybe they weren't prepared for that. Now they did say, you know, all their volunteers were out at other shelters already. And so they were mobilized. They were doing something in the area. And probably the last thing they were thinking about is, we got to make sure Joel Osteen's tweets look good this week. No, they were actually helping people.
Yeah.
But man, you know, as a social media manager, as a communicator, especially for somebody with such a large platform, you'd think you'd be, you know, on your phone, somebody would be paying attention to that, because that's important too. It almost in a greater sense, like, people look at Joel Osteen as Christianity. You know, there's four or five names that non-Christians are looking at as, that's what a Christian is. And so he's representing all of us, all denominations, all everything. And so there's a heavy responsibility there to pay attention to these things and do them right.
Yeah. So there are a couple of churches that I thought did it really well from my perspective that I want to highlight. One is First Baptist Houston. Greg Mott's the pastor there. I thought he was very responsive. It was almost just like live updates from Facebook Live. You could see, I mean, the truth is, he was scared for his family flooding. You could see the glaze in his eyes of not sleeping and exhaustion, and just saying, guys, we're going to pray. I was journeying with Pastor Greg, you know, on Facebook as he was sharing it. Interesting, just side note about this that I want to dig into with you. He used his personal platform. to kind of pastor through that. Now, another church is Church Unlimited in Corpus Christi. I really watched as they, before the storm, I thought Pastor Bill Cornelius had shared in a really dynamic way the day before the storm hit, you know, a kind of a word of inspiration to the congregation. And then the day the storm hit of, guys, here's what we're doing now. You know, and so he also at the same time, I don't know what happened to his house, but Corpus was rocked. And you know he's personally dealing with this, yet he's still mobilizing and leading and shepherding. And the way just over the last few days I've watched them as a church. Now, he's done almost everything through the church platform. So I think the question I have for you is pastors have a hard time sometimes differentiating their personal platform and their church platform. Sure. Do you think there's a better way in these disasters to communicate from one or the other?
I don't think you know, one way is bad and one way is good. I think that both could be fine. But my inclination is to say, hey, you know, especially if it's affecting your community or, you know, or you're there on the ground in the situation, people want to hear from a person. You know, we need that human connection. We need that proximity, even if it's virtual proximity, to be able to just have that connection. So I think from the pastor's own account, makes sense. He can be himself. He can be a lot more pastoral. It also helps, you know, this is a huge disaster and we should be jumping in on it. But at the same time, the global mission needs to carry on. And so your church has its mission, its things that it's doing, unless it's underwater. You know, it's probably going to still meet on Sunday and preach the gospel and do the things that you're doing. So that frees up that communications channel to focus on the mission and keep that going. You can still share things from your pastor. You can still share updates. You can still be involved, but it doesn't take over what you're doing. Especially if you're not in the direct, you know, path of this thing. And, you know, people don't want to just constantly see it on every single channel. So that seems to make sense to do it from the pastor as well. But yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong. I mean, you got to figure out what channels you actually have available and what audience is there. If the pastor's never updated before, maybe that's just not a great, you know, channel to do it on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I love that. There's not a right solution there. Yeah. The right it's more of a dependent on how you generally communicate. And in a disaster, in my opinion, to the subject is, in a disaster, you pretty much want to use every channel possible.
I would. Yeah, if you're in Houston or South Texas, it's like, yeah, this should be what you're doing right now.
Yep. So I have a pain point that I'm seeing. Now, this is probably a personal opinion here, but I see some churches out there that seem to be, it's like they're helping with their left hand and then they're selfieing with their right hand. Where it is, look at us and how much we're helping. What is there? I mean, there is a line there, you know, another question of, is there a line? How do you balance that line? Because you need to communicate. Here's what we're doing. Where's the line around that?
Yeah. I mean, I touch on that kind of stuff in the book too. Like part of PR and crisis management is part of this proactive side of, you need to tell people when you do good, especially to secular media. Like if you're trying to get more eyeballs on what you're doing, which hopefully funnels down to spreading the gospel, you need to tell them, because they're not going to be looking for that. What they're looking for is the Joel Osteen stories that they can blow up out of proportion and make us look bad, because that's what sells. That's controversy sells. So they're not looking for the small church who, you know, organized thousands of supplies. It's like, yeah, cool. We expect them to do that. So you need to tell them to do that. Now, I mean, with anything like this, you gotta check your heart a bit too. Yeah. If you're just constantly posting all the good things you're doing, and your heart behind that is look at us, look how cool we are. And then you turn and you know, you're spending money frivolously somewhere else or whatever. Like, you know, yeah, you got to check your heart with that too. But I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, we've mobilized, you know, these many trucks, this many supplies, we've given this much money, I think that's all stuff that you need to promote in a humble, loving, caring way. For one, it's going to inspire others to continue to give. It's going to show what needs are there. Yeah, we've raised $10,000, but our goal is 100, or the need is 100. Yeah. And so continue to give, but praise Jesus that we've been able to give this much. You know, things like that. I think, you know, it's all just candid communication is really the key here to keep people aware of what's happening, what the needs are, how they can help, and what you're doing. If Joel Osteen and Lakewood Church had done a better job at that, then the story would have been, hey, the largest church in the world with the most amount of resources is out there at all of these shelters working. And hey, they're a victim too. Their basements are literally flooded right now. Yeah. And the roads coming up to their church are flooded right now. But they've still mobilized thousands of people, and they've given, you know, thousands of dollars and things like that. And he's on national TV shows drawing attention towards how people can help. Like, that should have been the story. It should still be the story, but instead it's like, it's just fizzled out to, oh, they did what they could because of the pressure. It's like, no, they were already doing more than any church possibly could because they have the resources to do that. It's just crazy. But they fumbled through that a bit to be able to show exactly what they were doing, probably because they were just like, this is what we do. You know, it was probably from a humble approach. But I think that with a platform that size, you've got to put it out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, Justin, for those that that want to dig into this further and kind of understand more about your expertise, where do they get the book, and what's the best way to get information about your book?
Sure, it's called PR Matters, Survival Guide for Church Communicators. You can get it at churchprbook.com. You can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever you want to buy it. And it includes like a full crisis plan. So, I mean, part of this is having that written plan to say, hey, when a natural disaster hits our area, what's our plan? Like, what's the first thing we tweet? What do we do next? Who's in charge? Things like that. Anything from a natural disaster to like negative comments on social media to moral failure, you know, from a leader or something like that. You need to be prepared for those things. So the book walks you through that and then kind of gives you the plan so you can start creating one for your church as well.
Yeah. And don't wait until the disaster hits to pick up this book, because that's what people do. They freak out and they're like, okay, we didn't plan for this. You cannot plan for these things to happen. And a natural disaster is
one thing. You can't be naive to think it's never going to happen to you. You know, like you could be all on the up and up and then a hurricane hits and you're messing things up. So you definitely got to plan ahead.
Yep.
I mean, I get calls every month still of churches who are like, hey, there's protesters outside. What do we do? Or, hey, you know, so-and-so did this, and or there's accusations. And it's like, man, I can walk you through what to say right now and stuff like that, but it's kind of too little too late if you haven't already had a plan in place, you don't already have relationships built and things like that. Like, there's a lot of proactive groundwork that needs to be done to be able to handle these things well.
Yes. If you have a youth pastor, you need the book PR. I was a youth pastor, and the stupid
pastors are the worst, aren't they?
As a 23-year-old, like, I think about, I still remember this moment where I did a youth camp or like a youth retreat, and we had like with a college intern jumping over like 7 kids at a time. I'm like, I kind of broken a kid's neck, you know, like the stupid things I did as a 23, 24 year old youth pastor.
True.
Now obviously it goes beyond the dumb things that youth pastors do, but you never know what can happen. It's always a good idea to plan ahead. I went to seminary. I didn't take one course or class on.
They don't teach this
PR
stuff,
in seminary.
Yeah. It's a shame. They don't even teach social media and things in seminary. So not, you know, seminary's got its place, but
yep.
You know,
so go learn. Justin wrote the book, and it is the best purchase you can make, and it will save you so much heartache. And I promise you, the things you will learn and take away that hopefully you might never have to use, but I think there's just some positive sides to PR too that you're going to take away and practically can apply immediately, but prepare you for those other situations. So go get the book. Justin, you also run a series of conferences. I feel like anybody who's in church ministry probably already knows about that, but it would be good for you to just share a little bit about that church conference and what you're doing in that realm.
Yeah, I mean, we call it That Church Conference. You can find out more at thatcc.com. We've actually got our third annual conference here in Atlanta coming up at the end of September, and we're live streaming it for free for the first time. So if you go to thatcc.com, you can actually sign up and watch online from wherever you are, and we'll continue to do stuff online. But, I mean, we're just trying to teach churches how to communicate well, not only through PR and crisis stuff, but just how to utilize digital technology around you, social media, you know, websites, apps, things like that. Like, churches are still so far behind on this stuff, and we're just trying to teach them how to embrace the technology around them to be able to spread the gospel as far and wide as they can.
Yeah, that's awesome. And we are going to have you back on soon, where you and I are going to be arguing about apps and websites and some of those things. I want to tease that in advance. So we're friends today. We might not be friends tomorrow, but we will see. Justin, thanks so much for taking the time to share your expertise. If you have a question about PR and around this conversation, don't hesitate to use the hashtag SMC Podcast or send us a message on Facebook. Check out our messenger bot there, and we will respond. And we do respond to every single message you send to us on Facebook. So thanks for joining us on this episode of the Social Media Church Podcast.